And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Alexander Agunis, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
So, you know, the last couple of episodes, there have been a few times where we've had to really, like, stretch to figure out what we were going to do. There was a lot of pleading to get Jenny on last week just so we'd have something to talk about, and, like, for the first time in a very long time, we're now flooded with things to talk about. Isn't that right, James?
Oh, so much. We had to go through so many compilation articles because PaizoCon does this thing where they hold PaizoCon over my wedding anniversary, meaning I will never, ever get to look at anything about it. So I need compilation posts to keep me up to speed with it. Oh, Alex died. Wow. Amazing. So, we are using some notes. I'm looking for their names there that were written up by some other people in the Starfinder community. I just felt appropriate to shout them out because they were very helpful in preparing for the show. First person was Easy Does It. Looks like Twitter, YouTube as well. And there was another one, The Magic Sword, I believe was the name. Yep, The Magic Sword. So, they were there and got us all that stuff. Hey, Alex, you're back.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. I crashed it. You know, we were talking in the pre-show about how we wanted to minimize the amount of editing that James had to do, and now my internet has exploded. So
no, it's fine. I just gave shout outs to Magic Sword and Easy.
Good. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we have lots to talk about today, several documents full of it, and we don't have time to sit here and go willy-nilly. We just got to get into it. Isn't that right?
Yeah, well, otherwise we'll be here all night and I need sleep. I'm very sick.
It's true. So with that in mind, I will take point with how we're going to start. So let's start with the keynote address. Every year, Paizo begins PaizoCon with a keynote where all the different product line heads go and they talk a bit about their line and what's new. So Starfinder had a big spiel on Starfinder 2nd Edition.
Well, like, of course they need it.
Oh, they absolutely need it. So, I mean, Starfinder's had lots of really great field tests over the past year, but, like, this is the PaizoCon before the release. It was time to get in there, get big, and make us excited for this. And we got lots of questions about stuff. So one of the things fans had asked the team is whether or not we would be seeing archetypes in the playtest. And the answer is no. Not going to have archetypes. We already know how archetypes work. And this is kind of the overarching theme of the Starfinder playtest. The idea is that it uses the same core rules system as Pathfinder 2nd Edition Remastered. And that has been heavily tested at this point by plenty of people playing 1st Edition or 2nd Edition Pathfinder. They don't need to focus on that. They know how archetypes are going to work. They know how to balance those. They want to focus more on like Starfinder-y things. So let's talk about some of the fun Starfinder-y things that we get to talk about and look forward to in the playtest. James, did anything catch your eye right off of the bat?
So what I went to immediately was the roundup of the playtest game that they did.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I was just tracking how much time people spent healing each other, and I was happy to see that it was not very much.
Yeah, I know you're still very injured by Age of Ashes.
Where I was an algorithm. Is your team hurt? Yes, do this one thing and then your turn's over. Yeah,
but that's definitely not true. Although the team did have a healer, they had I believe Jenny was playing an Akashic Record Mystic. Does that sound right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think that Mike Kimmel was playing a Kasatha operative, and then you had Zazie, which I believe was a Sheeran Witchwarper, and then Sheeran Solarian, and Dustin was playing a Patra Soldier. And I really like the lineup that they picked for it, because you can like look at the art and you can see that like they picked these characters in part because they were cool, mm-hmm. but also because they wanted to show off some of the things they learned showing these classes off in the field tests. Right off of the bat, the soldier has a dashko, so it's like, oh, okay, melee soldier, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, it went pretty well. I was looking at the action economy for things like Whirlwind Strike, and All that sounded pretty fun. It sounded like you actually had choices, which is something I was worried about because, yes, attacking three times is a choice, but is it like a fun choice all the time?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that was interesting is like, I've read through and I've watched the play by post, and like Dustin and his soldier kind of accidentally steal the show. Like, sure, there's like a good crit or two in there. That's one of the reasons why. But like, you walk out thinking like, wow, this melee soldier is really good.
Yeah.
I also love that he's a blitzball player. It's not actually blitzball, but it's basically blitzball. It's like an extreme sports ball, but you put a grenade into it and you throw the ball with the grenade into it, and then the ball comes back, but the grenade explodes.
Yeah, and it's almost a shame that it w was so lucky. It did show the ramp potential, which I think
Yeah.
for as a player, it's pretty fun to be able to see that ramp potential when you crit stuff and it actually does stuff. I kind of wanted to see it go south because I really want to see how system works when things go south. But that's
God,
a
that'd be great to watch the developers all die on a live stream.
just get dice like how we do every other week.
But every other week, how about every encounter? Saint Quatro taketh more than he giveth us.
Yeah, so I because I like seeing what happens when you're up against the wall, because I feel like that's
Yes.
a better indicator of how the system's going to play, because those moments are going to stick in your head more than the ones where you're kind of rolling, right?
Yeah. Well, Dustin is in chat right now, so maybe we should tell Dustin to tell Thirsty that for his next adventure, Thirsty needs to brutalize all of the developers on screen. The most like CR plus three, put them through the ringer. That's what we want to see. How does Starfinder play when the odds are overwhelming?
Yeah, because right now Starfinder 1, you can go into some pretty up CR
Yeah.
fights if you're willing to really just take a beating.
Man, I have to throw like CR plus three or four at my high level party right now. It's wild.
Yeah, and
But
in our other game, we did some encounters that were like CR plus 4.
yeah. And now some cool things that we got to see in this playtest. There is a new cantrip. It's called Eldritch Lance. 30-foot range, targets AC and one creature. And you basically just blast them with magic. Like, it's mental damage. It's cool. I like it. I've heard a lot of 5e fans who play second edition. They're like, I can play a warlock with this. It's like, you can, but like, you really want to?
Yeah, you want to play a whole nother system just to do the same thing you've been doing?
Yeah. There's also something called a hard light scamp. I don't know if you knew, but in the remaster of Pathfinder, they changed methods into scamps in order as part of like the OGL wording changes, you know?
Oh, huh.
And so like a hard light scamp is literally like a first edition method, but like this little guy who can change his shape and look like holograms. He's very cool. He's a good
Oh.
boy. I just hope he doesn't become the new for Starfinder. It's is it Space Goblin is the one they use over and over again in every adventure?
Glitch goblins.
Glitch Goblin. Glitch Gremlins, right. Yeah. Don't do that.
I
Don't
said
overwhelm me.
glitch goblin. Glitch
Yeah,
gremlin,
we
yeah.
merge them together. It's fine.
Yeah.
We're professionals.
Yeah, I know that's up on the screen and it looks terrible. Alex asked me to do this with like 4 minutes before show, so
I did.
we're mostly an audio podcast, so yeah, that's just there.
Yeah, but if you watch us live on twitch.tv/nodirection, we typically do our show on the last Wednesday of every month. You might get to see some of the clippings of like slides and stuff that James puts on screen, or you just might have to look at my face for an hour. I don't know. It's a grab bag.
Yeah, hey, look, if I get told to do these things earlier, I can get them done better.
It's true. I didn't tell him with enough time. It's 100% true. I was like, wow, I bet our viewers would like to see some of these clips.
And you're right, some of it is cool.
Yeah.
Enjoy it in the scuff this form. I'll be covering my
In
face.
the most garbage of formats. Some other things I thought were really cool was Jenny is an Akashic mystery mystic in this game. And one of the abilities that her mystic had was anytime that they spent points out of their vitality network, the person they gave points to got to make a free check to recall knowledge, which is really cool. In Pathfinder First Edition, there's lots of abilities that trigger when you recall knowledge successfully. So, like, I saw that and I'm like, oh, can we get a mystic best friend in the far-flung past? That'd be good.
So, when you get a free recall knowledge check, is that like a free as an action wise, or you don't?
Yeah, it's
Oh,
a free action. Like,
okay.
you just roll, enjoy it, have fun.
Okay, that's what I was like, free as in not expending resources, or free as in, okay, I get it.
Yeah. They also showed a little bit about how the Witch Warper's quantum aura works. This is an aura where a lot of the Witch Warper's paradigm ships affect. It was pretty cool. They got to do this neat thing where, like, the person in the aura moved slower. It seems like the Witch Warper is going to keep a lot of its roots as, like, a crowd control kind of character, which I like. There was another version where the aura gave everybody inside of it concealment because reality was shifting back and forth. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, very very direct in its interpretation of it.
Yes. Didn't matter to Dustin, though. He crit that person and killed them and end the encounter early.
Yeah, concealment is just a chance, you know?
It's true. You can't stop it.
Yeah, if it's your time, it's your time.
Yeah. Anything you liked from that live game before we should move on to the next thing?
I like that they eventually had to go over how cool Solarian things were because you didn't really get to notice it.
right.
Because everything was so fast.
The Solarian's very cool, but we killed everything so quick. It's all Dustin's fault. He crit with that Dashko.
It is just the thing of me getting used to 2E terminology, getting statuses like Clumsy One and things like that. It's going to take me some time to get accustomed to that.
Yeah, Clumsy is like -1 to AC, so that's pretty good. Yeah. Some of the things in there that are really cool that I liked, having gotten to play a few of these classes and see them in action at PAX last year, they changed Get'em. So Get'em, in addition to giving your person a attack bonus, giving that guy an armor class penalty, so it's easier to hit them. It also gives them a reflex saving throw penalty, which means it's easier to hit them with like automatic weapons and certain spells, which is cool.
Yeah, another thing I did notice is players without magic making enemies roll saves. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, like, so a lot of the weapons do that. They have to roll against your class DC, which is cool. One of the things in first edition is, like, a lot of classes get the DC but don't really use it for much. But, like, the fact that area weapons do is very cool. It definitely seems like the melee version of the soldier has like an AoE whirlwind attack with their weapon, and that is the AoE that they use to put the suppressed condition on things, which I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like being a soldier and being able to say roll a save, that feels good. That feels intimidating. Your aura is overpowering.
I'm so strong. Fight boy will fight again. All right. So now some other cool stuff that we can talk about. We know from a little bit talking about like in the keynote speech when things were talking about a lot of the core like story ideas still exist, like the Hell Knights are still in the setting, Sora's Zena Druids, Sora Free Captains, and like they also did a panel where they talked about the stuff they were gonna do for Starfinder 1E before the OGL nightmare happened, and that one like kind of hurt my soul a little bit. I was like, no, it's like being seeing that Witch Warper and there shimmers the quantum aura, and then for a second, first edition Starfinder, no, then it's gone.
Yeah, didn't they move the player, not player's guide? What is the name of that book?
So one of the things that they have flat out said is that there was a book called The Faction Guide.
That's it, Faction Guide.
That was going to exist, and now that information is going to be in different places. They mentioned that one specifically because they had already ordered all the freelance words for it when that happened. I actually wrote on that book, and I'm very sad.
Oh, oof, big oof.
My tears. So yes, a lot of my concern, I had skin in this game. I never said our show wasn't biased. Remember that.
I think it actually comes up with a notice when you join the stream saying it's not biased.
Yeah, we're extraordinarily biased. Like being unbiased is not what we're about. Like you we're here for to give you our hearts and souls to pour it out. And you know how we feel.
Yeah, and sometimes it's good to get free product to do that with.
Yes. That's okay, fair. Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some more fun stuff. I want to talk about the setting effect. Are you cool with that?
Yeah.
So Paizo likes to do this thing that when a new edition comes out, they change the world in some way. We saw that in Pathfinder 2nd edition, where the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path saw the Whispering Tyrant break out from his prison in Gallowspire, almost get to the Starstone, and like that's sort of the state of the world in Pathfinder 2nd edition. They told us what's going to happen in the lead up to second edition Starfinder. I'm going to be honest, James, I don't know how you feel about it. I think Starfinder's event is way more cool and way more like, it's a much bigger scale event.
It's much more concise too, because I think the first edition, the second edition of Pathfinder was also leaning on the fact that you A, knew what happened in the adventure paths, and B, know what happened at
Yeah.
the end of the adventure paths. Not
And
everybody
that's a
did.
good that's a good thing to point out, because one of the things we were told at PaizoCon is that there were going to be two playtest adventures during the run of the playtest. The first one is a first level adventure called I believe it's called Cosmic Birthday is what it's called. And I don't remember the name of the second one, but it's based around a group called I think it was the Chidoran Squad. I could be wrong, but it's based around the Chidoran, which is like the crazy 7-point star of ancient Aslanti. So it sounds like something Aslanti. We also know that Lasala from Pathfinder is coming back as a god for some reason, which is
Because
really exciting.
she always comes back.
She
Always.
does. She never goes away. She's like the cat in that song, only it's thousands of years every time. So, but anyway, Cosmic Birthday is the one that I want to talk about, because Cosmic Birthday deals with the setting shaking event, which we've been told a bit about. And there was also a spread that was put up on screen. And I'm not going to share everything that was on that spread, but I'm going to talk a lot about it. And James is going to put that a really janky version of that spread up live for everybody who's watching live. So you could try to dig through too if you'd like. But some things we already knew. We knew going into second edition that Zonkuthon and Shelyn, God of Pain and God of Art, were going to merge together into a composite deity called Zon Shelon. We knew that the iconic mystic is the previous edition mi mystic's kid, but worshiping this new like conglomerate deity. Well, a Cosmic Birthday details the events on how that happened, and it's wild. It's wild. Okay, so here's what we know. You ready, James?
Yeah.
You ready? It's wild. So Auchtern is the last planet in the Galarian system. Auchtern has been in this game since Distant Worlds for Pathfinder First Edition. And in going from Pathfinder First Edition to Second Edition, the playtest adventure for that was called Doomsday Dawn, which was about Auchtern hatching. You see, we've known as players and like GMs for a long time that Auchtern is the unborn fetal entity of like a great old one, just in the back of the setting.
Just chilling.
And yeah, just chilling, just getting ready to for its birthday. And the birthdays in Starfinder, those Pathfinder second edition players, they're not cool enough. Like they heard it was hatching and they're like, no, we're going to stop that. And they stopped
Boo,
that in that
boo.
playtest adventure. But you know what? We'll take it. Come on, bring it over to Starfinder, because in us it hatches.
Nice.
Yeah, it hatches. So what we know is that there is a great old one that wants to steal its energy, its power. It wants to do something bad to this unborn great old one. And Shelyn goes to fight it. Shelyn being the god of art, she's got a glaive, she's really cool. I really like this because Shelyn has been in Starfinder Society since season one, and like nobody knew why, because she's not one of the core 20 deities. People were like, oh, Shelyn's still in this game? Cool, I guess, but why are you here? Like all
Yeah.
it makes it feel like all that stuff with Strawberry Machine Cake mattered, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
because the first one takes place in a space shrine to Shelyn,
Yeah.
like when you
Yeah.
go to the
100%.
concert.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I love that. I love that continuity, and it feels important, right? And so Shelyn goes and she fights this great old one. And I'm not 100% sure who it is, but given that Narlotep is mysteriously a core deity in first edition, I think she fights Narlotep. That might have been said somewhere, but I haven't seen it in any of the notes or any of the shows.
There was a note saying Narlotep is not as important as they were before.
Yeah, I think it was Narlotep. I think she fights Narlotep. The other reason is like, so Lovecraft and having that influence in your game is all well and fine to an extent, but like also he was a really kind of meh person. And that's putting it mildly. I don't want to swear, so you have to do more
Thank
editing.
you.
So he's a very meh person, and getting his creation out in a core out of a core position in the game is probably something that they would do. So I'm gonna guess that it was Narlotep. And so
Yeah.
I let's continue. Let me continue my story, assuming that it's Narlotep she's fighting, because that's cooler. So she goes and she fights Narlotep, and Narlotep is like beating her. She's not as prominent. She's also like an artist who's got a glaive and not like an ancient evil old one.
Right.
So she's losing. Zahn Cuthon shows up and is like, sister, and she's like, brother, and he's like, sister, and they fight him together for whatever reason. They go and fight him together, and they're getting their butts kicked. They're losing. So in a final act of self-sacrifice from both of them, they merge themselves together into Zahn Shilin, and they beat the Great Old One, who I assume is Narlotep, so badly that not only does he lose, but he gets kicked out of reality.
Wow.
Yeah, which is something we know can happen, because we know there's a threshold of this, of the Galarian reality, but it's never happened before, so this is very cool.
Yeah, especially because, like, aren't they, like, material plane deities?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Just banished them.
Okay. So she banishes him. Octurne hatches.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
So we know this does some things. The first thing we know is that the shell explodes across the pack worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And those little fragments are like a new metal that everybody wants, which is, okay, it's like, cool. Great job.
Okay.
Fun. It creates a new type of outsider that's on the cover of the first adventure that I mentioned, Cosmic Birthday. They're called midwives, which is great. And the reason they're called midwives is because this god is called the newborn. Okay, cool. Newborn.
So they're things that take care of the newborn.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of them, man, oh man, it's really worried about its newborn baby. It's got to give it like something, you know, like a baby needs like milk. Well, like this baby needs something. I guess it needs magic. So where's the biggest source of magic that you could feed a hungry, growing baby in the pack world streams?
David Blaine?
Second. That is number two.
Okay. Oh, Starstone.
Yeah, the Starstone, exactly. So it goes to Absalon Station, and it starts draining energy out of the Starstone. Huh. We know this does two things. The first thing we know is that it turns the ghost layer of Absalon Station into the back rooms.
Huh.
It specifically calls them a liminal space where people glitch out and disappear into.
Huh.
Cool. I like it. Number two, it sends an explosion of psychic energy across the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I've read the spread. The one that I saw that was very interesting is that it knocks a certain planet out of orbit. And that planet gets moved closer to Galarian Sun than it's supposed to be. It's sometimes closer to Galarian Sun, but not this time of century, millennia.
Oh yeah, because it's slow axis.
Yeah, because it's slow axis, exactly.
Oh.
And being that close, as you might remember from like the description of Triaxis. Now, granted, every time we've been to Triaxis, both in first edition and now, it's been like in a cold spell.
Yeah.
But in that original document, it talks about that during the warm months, everything thaws and monsters wake up. So that's kind of what happens everywhere. That just stuff starts going bad across the whole galaxy.
Oh, that's like things in the permafrost waking up like bacteria and get like 40,000-year-old anthrax.
Yeah, apparently monsters are waking up on Castrovel. Mm. The dreamers on that one moon of Livar, apparently all of them wake up from the psychic blast.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's all interesting. Of them, like,
which is scary because they're supposed to be really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't remember what happens out in the Vescarium, but it specifically says that the blast was far enough that it was detectable on Vesk 4.
Yeah. Does that have anything to do with the Vesk war against the Aeon?
Maybe. I hope so. That'd be great.
Yeah,
maybe.
I'm really interested to see how that plays out, because like it seems like a cool in and away from the pack worlds and other like it gives Patros and Vesk more things to do. Also, Ejigri, which I love.
Yeah.
But I want to see how they do that without getting too close to real world events.
Yeah. Well, so the other thing that I think is really interesting about it is like this reminds me of the Drift Crisis, but this feels more personal, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, there are more worlds that are directly affected. And we're like, oh no, drift travel. I can't travel to other places, but at least my home's okay.
Right.
Home's not okay anymore.
Yeah.
Your home's not okay anymore.
The midwife is coming.
She's a coming. Apparently, the 13 priests who are the first midwives are like the demigod, like herald tier versions of them. And that's scary. We know that this god is now worshipped in Galarian. There's a really hilarious picture on the spread describing this entity with like a little baby Vesk in like this cute little flower dress. And man, oh man, like it looks like people celebrate it as like a birthday party. It's great because like its domains are all really positive. Like there's like a little section that talks about some of its domains, and it's like, you know, important change and like, you know, zeitgeist and like the times. And then one of them is just Eldritch Horrors. Like, oh, all these happy things, Eldritch Horrors.
I love it. I 100% love it. And just the note that there's like different cults that are believing it in different ways. So in that idea, in that vein, it seems like it's open to what it would eventually turn into as it matures.
Yeah.
Based on how it's worshipped.
I mean, like it's interesting because like we've never seen a baby be a god. Like usually it's a mortal that ascends. Like this is the first like this. What could it be? I'm excited. I think it's going to be very cool. I'm very good stuff.
I think you have, isn't Bri basically a baby god?
Yeah, kind of. But like in Starfinder, Triune is still young. They're like 3 centuries old, which is pretty young for a god. Yeah. But like, but Bri would have been around since Pathfinder first edition in Starfinders. Like she's X number of years old, where X is however long from Pathfinder to the gap, and then the gap plus 300.
Maybe I was thinking about the covert the conglomerate deity there.
Yeah, definitely. It's very good, exciting. A lot of people. There's apparently tons of information about this deity in the playtest books, specifically Cosmic Birthday. It's awesome. The mystic that Jenny was playing actually worshipped this deity too, which was interesting.
Why would you not worship the goth, the artsy goth now?
I mean, you certainly can. Just it's art through suffering, right?
That's yeah, it's Shelzuthan. Like it's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you like your skin, maybe not, but get over it.
I think it's funny. One of the things that Mike said about it is, and I quote, "I love the way Jenny set up the newborn as a deity that seems like it should be feared across the pack worlds and probably is feared in most places. It's a weird cosmic entity from Octurn, after all, but there are plenty of reasonable people who heed the newborn's teachings and not just cultists. It's a more nuanced deity than that, with plenty of different angles and philosophies to dig into."
Yeah. It reminds me, what's that one in Pathfinder? Arshea? Arshea had a lot of similar profiles, right? Like times of change, doors, windows, basically new things. And Arshea is pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also, now, go ahead.
I was going to say, also Eldritch, I think, is a great way to go as far as antagonist / introspection. Because there's just so much you get to do with it as opposed to undead or demons or evil outsiders. Like, not that those things are bad, it's just you know how to deal with those already, whether you know it or not. It's just part of a human and gamer lore, as opposed to Eldritch Horror, which is oftentimes you're making up beliefs as you go because your stuff works and you're just not able to figure out why.
Yes, absolutely. Now, switching gears a little bit, like I mentioned earlier, there was an entire podcast panel about transitioning Starfinder 1E to Starfinder 2E, right? I mentioned that they announced that there were a couple of different things that they had planned that just didn't get to happen. The faction guide won't happen. There was going to be a book, apparently, that it didn't even get to like freelance point. It was going to be called the Extraplanar Archive. That was half monster book of different outsiders and half player options, and they were going to add like a combat caster class, a quote heavy armor specialist spellcaster as a core class. It never got beyond concepting, but they said it's something they'd like to revisit in second edition. And they also mentioned that there was a couple of really cool adventure paths ideas that they didn't really get to do because of everything that happened. But there is a lot of interesting things to come out of this transition. One of the things is that the Barathu apparently have a lot more like physical differences than they originally did. Because like the original Barathu kind of looked like legless shrimps with long tongues, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the jellyfish.
Yeah, sort
of. There's a not picture the, not the actual jellyfish, but the other like Man of War looking jellyfish type things.
Yeah, now there's a new one of Barathu that looked like that Man of War jellyfish race from book 6 of Dead Sons.
Yeah,
I'm talking about there.
Yeah,
yeah. So apparently they could be a little bit different. And one of the things that we were told is that they just get a 20-foot fly speed at level one. They don't have to invest into it like pretty much every Pathfinder second edition Ancestry does. Ooh. They just fly. That's how they move. Ooh. Which is cool. There's also apparently a Sheeran heritage that has wings. I like that. Give me fly boy. It's good. There's also a 17th level feat where they can fuse with another player to make, and I quote, a Barathu mech suit thing.
I know it's trying to sound cool, but it just reminds me of Avatar, you know, where they put their little ponytails together.
Yeah. I mean, there's also an ability where a Barathu can copy some of an ally's genetic code in order to temporarily gain benefits from them.
All right. That's 23 and me. They did that already.
Yeah. They have a couple of different pictures of different types of androids. There's a more like, I'm human with some robot bits, and there's I'm a full robot with like magic stuff covered in vines. So like there's a whole bunch of different android options. Pretty exciting. There's also, they showed off this Patra that apparently is going viral on the internet right now, because like the core Patra is like a dude with a cat head and no tail, but they're introducing a small sized heritage for the Patra that kind of looks like Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank.
The sand cat.
Yeah. If you Google Sandcat Patra, you will find what it looks like. I'm not going to put it on the screen here because it's everywhere. Everyone wants it. My only feedback, I kind of feel like Patra should just get the pick. I'm not a big fan of you need X heritage in order to be small. That feels a little too like, it's like the same reason why we don't have Chalexian as a heritage. You know, that puts too many people in one bucket. So I would rather them. I know you're not a Pathfinder 2e person, James, but like Howl of the Wild just came out for Pathfinder, and one of the options is Awakened Animals, where you get to pick your size from like three options. I'd rather just something like that, where I could have my Patra just be small or medium.
Yeah. And then does Pathfinder 2e, sorry, give you any benefits or things for being small? Does it not care?
Nope, no benefits.
Just like in Starfinder. So don't really care. Hold on.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. So I think that would be fun. I like that. There's also like this art of a potential design for the iconic Witch Warper where he looks a lot older and he's wearing like a Space Marine outfit and has a big sword. I think it looks a little too martial, but I think it's cool. So
no, you need the spell blade, the old Hexen man. When you're out of spells, you got one spell left.
Blade. I love him. Now, apparently, like, Precog and Witch Warper both had a lot of their terminology merged together into one when it comes to the Witch Warper. One of the things that Mike mentioned is that because he was the design lead on the Witch Warper, they choose a paradox and an anchor, because the paradox is what's weird about them and the anchor anchors them to their reality.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. They also said that the Witch Warper is apparently going to be an intelligence-based class in this game. What do you think about that?
I think it's fine, especially if you're getting access to Pathfinder classes. It is like it gives Starfinder a bevy of intelligence-based casters now, but
yeah.
I think it's potatoes when you can choose Sorcerer now.
So in the playtest, the Mystic is Wisdom. And then there's this class, which is intelligence, and then there's nothing else. But I do agree with you that if they're going to do a technomancer, then they're going to have two intelligence and one wisdom and no charisma. I think I'd kind of like to see you just get to pick one of those three ability scores. Like, the thing that anchors you is something that's strong about yourself. I think it would be cool if you got to choose whether your key attribute was wisdom, charisma, or intelligence, because that's not something that any of the classes have done yet, like any of the spellcasting classes. The psychic in 2e picks between intelligence and charisma, but none of them pick between all three, and having that option mean, at least for me, it would make the game feel more fleshed out, because it means that you would have a spellcaster for each of the traditional mental scores. But whatever they do is fine.
Yeah, also, I mean, it fits the idea of a Witch Warper. It's like it's like a Doctor Strange type thing where you can, there's so many ways you can gain insight, whether it's through being able to pick up on other people's things by having your own intuition or being very studied on it. So it fits the lore of it.
Yeah, I agree. You could be an intelligence Witch Warper who like just knows so much about how reality works, and you've seen the truth.
Yeah, you're like Rick Sanchez.
Yeah, you're like Rick Sanchez, exactly. Or like your charisma base and the force of your will, the force of your personality lets you bend reality to your desires. That's charisma. And then if you're wisdom, it's about like perceiving the truth of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how things really are.
Yeah,
I think that,
the materia of the universe and all the energy.
yeah, I think being able to pick between the three would make it a unique class. That would be cool. I we'll see if they do that. Dustin, at
Yeah.
the very least, is hearing us and can't respond and tell us no.
I mean, you can always tell us no. That's free, you
It's true.
know?
It's a free action. Tell us no.
Always, always. I mean, I'm sure it can stand on other merits, but it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Now, one of the things they also mentioned is that they wanted to make sure the close quarter soldier works well, and that they could use their melee weapon to do area attacks. We know that works. We read and watched the stream.
Yep, it's better than
Cool.
Whirlwind Strike in Pathfinder 1E.
Yes, very exciting. Very good. We also know that there's a couple of new gods coming. There's something called the Polyphonic Collective.
Wait, wasn't
I
that the
don't.
power of like Reddit?
Yeah. I guess. I don't know. We know that Lasala is going to be a thing. She's got an updated holy symbol. And there's a holy symbol that I think is supposed to be Hyax, the friendship Sheeran goddess.
Hylax, yeah.
Yeah. But also it just looks like a green Sheeran. So I keep joking that like in the far-flung future, Akakek is still around and he's got like Akakek Red Mantis Assassins. That would be cool.
Oh,
I'd
Green
like that.
Mantis Assassins, let's
The
go.
Green Mantis Assassins!
Let's go. Also, Lao Shu Po's there.
Yeah, Lao Shu Po is
I
awesome.
think that other one's IM-80, right?
I don't know. I have no
Is it
idea what that is.
that the what's her name's path the constellation is? I could be wrong.
I believe you. I thought her holy symbol was a long sword.
I thought so too, but that constellation I feel like means something, and I'm just too dumb to remember it right now.
That's true. We know that apparently there's going to be something called Void Elves. You might want to make sure Blizzard Entertainment's okay with you using that. But I'm excited. I'm wondering if this is going to be their drow replacement.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. Yeah, because drow they
Cool.
can't use because it'll work. And I mean,
Awesome.
Void Elf is also a generic term.
Yeah.
Like, Blizzard would love to do that, but there's a reason why 40K changed Eldar to Aladari.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you gotta change the actual word, not the describer word.
Very true. Yeah. And some of the other stuff we know, there was a Q&A. Starfinder 2E is 100% compatible with 2E, not necessarily balanced against each other, given the example of a Barathu with a laser rifle. It sounds like that, the fact that they don't take Pathfinder 2 in mind when designing Starfinder 2 is like their reason for saying that Starfinder 2 is its own game system. There was a comment by, I think it was by Thirsty, saying that like if you think that we're not our own game, then you're just giving into the clickbait. And I'm like, man, don't say it like that. That's you might be right, but that's just making you sound potentially out of touch. Just be like, wait and see. We think that we're fine, and our goal is to make something that is compatible but not the same. You can do it. I believe in you, Thirsty.
Yeah, they did
I
mention
believe in
having some stuff that might not go 1-to-1.
you. Yeah.
And as part of that, they mentioned updates as far as FAQs go and having that run
Yeah.
potentially through society rather than through the core book line. So instead of getting reprints of books to fix FAQs, you and invalidating books, because stores don't want to buy books that are going to go bad, essentially, is having all those fixes on the society end. So you have your rule set for consistent
Yeah.
play for society there, and people can take it into their own home games, but the meat of the rule books won't change significantly. At least that's how I was understanding how they were talking about it.
Yeah.
I think it's
And another,
smart.
I think so too. I think another thing that's smart is that they made sure to say that like Starfinder isn't going to be a six level spellcasting game. They're doing the full 9 levels plus 10th level spells like in Pathfinder Second Edition, which I kind of think that's probably for the best, personally. Like, I think Starfinder kind of struggled with its magic feeling relevant in first edition in a lot of cases. There are a couple of standouts like Mind Thrust, but for the most part, eh. And I'd be happy to see something that's got a bit more oomph to it and a bit more like grandiose powers. Like, open up that pit to hell or whatever. I mean, you don't have to edit that. Hell is a place in this game.
Yeah,
it's not a curse.
Yeah. Part of it is just Starfinder First Edition, I think, put less of an emphasis on magic, but kept it there. And the difference between a 6th level Starfinder spell and a 9th level Pathfinder spell wasn't actually that different. They were often just coded as one or the other, and it was just figuring out what belonged in the middle. So it created a, I think, inconsistent expectation for how good your spells were at a level.
Mm-hmm. Dustin wants me to know that he could say no to anything we say right now, but it has no weight in a Twitch chat, and that Santa Claus is going to sue everybody for using elves.
And Junkblade.
And Junkblade. I hope Junkblade comes back. I wrote the original Junkblade, and the fact that that spell spiraled into popularity as much as it did made me feel so proud, because I told Owen, I was like, people are going to like this spell. He's like, that's going to be niche. People aren't going to build builds around it.
Why do people think you don't want melee in a sci-fi game? What do you always see in a sci-fi game? People are shooting and they're like, I wish I had a knife.
It's not like the most popular sci-fi character of like the last 40 years didn't use a space sword. No.
No, that's wild. No. It's not like mechs are a thing and they give them big dumb chain whips and stuff like that when they in theory right? should be shooting at each other from miles away. Melee is fun.
Melee is really fun.
Always has been.
Always has been. It's the astronaut meme. we know that there's going to be no Lost Omen lines for Starfinder. All of the content for the world they want to put in with adventures, and they said they'll have more to say at Gen Con, but they said that they're going to be experimenting with adventures compared to Pathfinder Second Edition, and their adventures are going to be hardcover compilations like Mechageddon.
Yes. I'm so excited for that.
I love that. I mean, like, I know that having people on a subscription plan is great to ensure like sustainability for long-term profits, but that book is a better product delivery.
It is.
It is superior. I have the whole Mechageddon adventure path sitting on my shelf now. It's mine. The whole thing is done. I don't have to wait for another 2 months for the rest of it. It's there.
It's also like the thing about having stores have viable product. Like, I went to Complete Strategist, which is a local store, and I was looking at some of the adventure paths, and it's like, cool, they have one book of Strange Aeons.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with that?
Or like how you'll go and like typically the first and second volumes of an adventure will sell out, and then all the stores will be left with a book they can't sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like book six, enjoy.
Also, I'm dumb. Don't make me lose pages. I'm going to lose those books.
Help also, me. Like if people aren't going to buy the 6th book in Adventure Path on average, then bundle it all together and make them.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. It's a sexy product.
Yeah, and you'll make me feel better because you're giving me more. Like, sure, I'm paying more money for a bigger book, but you're giving me more for my buck in that way.
The thing is, I don't think you're paying significantly more, because at $15 a volume, $15, $30, $45, $60, $75, $90.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
you do it. But the flip side for that is that they don't have product that sits on the shelf and doesn't sell. Like, it feels counterintuitive to say, oh, we're charging less for the same amount, but like now you're actually moving things, like things that would have just stuck before. I think it's a good idea, both from a business sense and from a I would like the finished book to be nice and hardbound pleased sense.
Yeah, it sits nice on a shelf, and you can give it to somebody and they're like, wow, this is it, instead of, because that's another thing of choice overwhelming. Even though like wanting to do an adventure path isn't a choice, you either do it or you don't, the fact that there's books. And if you're brand new to a hobby, you go, why are there 6 of them? Do I need all 6 of them? I can just get the first one, run that, and then see if I like it. And then you just get caught in this choice paralysis that can slow how people get into it. Because this is a hard hobby. There's a lot of rules. And making transitions easier by just saying, here it is, I think is good for the hobby in general.
Yeah, definitely. Now, that is like the majority of the stuff that we've seen about like major story spoilers, but we haven't touched on any of like the mechanic stuff, because we were shared a class spread, we were shared a page of feats, a page of spells, and some weapons. So like there's still a little bit more to talk with, and we've got about 10 minutes left to go. So are you ready, James?
Yep, I threw up Eseth with his dumpy legs.
Oh my god, I hate this art so much. I love everything about this presentation. This man and his art style lives rent-free in my head, and it causes psychic damage to me every single time.
Why are his like, grippers so lovingly rendered?
Yeah, so like, I James and I were looking at it, and we think that what this is that those legs are armor plates. Like, that's not actually what his body looks like. Like, it's on top of like a full suit. And I'm not sure if that's accurate, but like, why would you want to wear like boots that whose armor just looks like your toes? I hate it.
Also, why would the armor stop before your crotch? I guess if you don't have the crotchular features, but I know I would want that to continue.
Yeah, I don't like this art. I don't like this style. He looks too bulky. Those toes give me nightmares. Like, I'm more afraid of those toes than I am of the newborn.
I think the art is fine. It's just one of those things that when you look at it more, you just start to go, because it makes the proportions look a little bit weird. Because it's like a flared leg, it makes the legs as a whole seem thicker. But it is proportioned fine.
I'm just gonna look at the borders and like the background and like the typography, because like everything else on this page is beautiful. I don't know if I like the text they use for the word operative. It's kind of squished and stretched.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as clear as it should be. I think somebody who has any level of visual disabilities or impairments is going to struggle with that font. But aside from that, like, the color is gorgeous. You know, James and I were talking. This reminds me of like the Jetsons future.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like it went from like a gritty retro style in first edition to like the Jetsons, which is definitely a tone shift, but I don't hate it.
Yeah, a lot of the things just seem brighter, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you can kind of get grimdark overwhelm, where it's just everything sci-fi and future is awful and terrible. It's the 40K effect, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also think it's funny because, like, we have the, like, this whimsical, beautiful colors, pinks and pastels and very nice, modern, fresh, clean, pretty, whimsical, ooh, whimsy. And then, like, you look at their first adventure, an eldritch horror emerges, sending the planets into chaos as psychic energy rains down. Space fascists come to take your families away. Dark, gritty, but whimsy.
I mean, it's like Haster, right? Where you go to the grand ballroom and then you don't know what you're eating and then you get lost in the sauce and then all of a sudden everything's terrible.
You're never going to let me live that down from Strange Aeons, are you?
No, I'm never going to let you live that up. I had a great time in that game.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Now, going back to more stuff to look at, they shared us one page of skill feats, which includes the full list of deception and diplomacy skill feats and 5 miscellaneous new skill feats. One thing that should be said is that the playtest booklet references Pathfinder 2nd Edition Player Core. We've been told that those skill feats that are in the Pathfinder book are going to be reprinted in the final printing of Starfinder, but it doesn't make sense to use pages on a playtest book to reprint something. That's a final product thing. And I don't know about you, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of dumb, so I'll need to like have things together because I'll be learning from the start. But, you know, if you're new to a hobby, you're probably not getting it on the playtest, right? Like, I just have to suck it up here.
Just make Dustin go through and hyperlink it to Archives of Nethys. It's fine. No, and for everybody.
I feel like they're busy enough. I just need to get good.
No. Dustin will do it. I'm sure he'll write a script for it. It'll be fine. I bet you now that I've said it, he's going to go, well, I could, and do it in 10 minutes, and then it'll go live. Just watch. And then Thirsty will say, no, you can't do that. It makes all of our lines hyperlinked in the printing. And he'll go, oh. I understand how this is going to work. I know both of those two men very well.
So yeah, I'm just going to get good.
That's fine. You could get good. I believe in you. Some of the cool things that we can see, there is a new skill feat called Face of the Crowd, where you can hide in a crowd. That sounds great in Starfinder. I don't want all these people to see me. I'll just duck under there. It's good. There's Favored Disguise that lets you disguise into a specific thing easily. There is Feigned Death. You can use deception to pretend to be dead. I don't know how that doesn't exist in Pathfinder already. I'm going to be honest with you.
Pathfinder does.
Does it? In Pathfinder 2nd Edition?
Oh, I don't know about 2nd. I don't. 2nd Edition doesn't exist to me.
Yeah, that's fair. And then there's Kiss It Better, which is you can, this was in the playtest, you basically attempt a deception check and kiss somebody, and then you make a roll, and if you roll high enough, you give them hit points back, like as if you treated them, which is hilarious. Huh. There's awesome, yeah, because you just, you think they think they're feeling better.
You kiss their boo-boos.
You kiss their boo-boos. I like the sound of additional spoons. You could spend 10 minutes to counteract certain effects, probably mental effects, but doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. We can also see Dive for Cover, Digital Ambassador, Digital diversion is basically the mechanic talent from first edition, where a mechanic could use computers to faint people, which I like that being a skill feat. That's good for me.
Yeah, that's fun. And also sounds like a Jamiroquai album.
Yes, absolutely. We also know that there is divine weapon training, which builds off of deific obedience. I'm shocked that we haven't had deific obedience in Pathfinder 2nd edition already, and that this is where it is, but like, hey, I guess all the 2nd edition fans are going to have to buy this book, because 2nd edition famously doesn't feed them skill feeds, but you know who will?
Huh.
Starfinder.
Yeah.
Thirsty will feed you skill feeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's like lots of good stuff there. Some of them are better for Starfinder, some are general for both systems. Everybody should buy them and get both of them. There's also some good spells. Did you have a chance to look at any of the spells that they showed on that spell page?
Not really, actually. I get some of the stuff done at the last minute.
That's fair. One of the ones that's really cool, first of all, it follows the same like layout as Pathfinder 2nd edition, where spells that do a lot with like illusions and like memory altering stuff have the uncommon trait, in case like as a GM, like that's like an X card kind of a thing.
Ooh.
So like, yeah. So I mean it's fine. You know, you could play with like our friend Mike, and Mike could say, I'm not playing 2nd edition, we're playing 1st edition, we're not touching that system. But if he decided he wanted to play 2nd edition, he could say, I'm going to not have this trait. These are common. Everybody can do that. I think that's okay. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of how rarity traits work in general. I do not like them. But if they're trying to keep cross compatibility, okay.
Yeah, I guess if it's for that reason, it probably makes sense. I just want you to have access to everything and just get over it. But yeah, you know, it is what it is.
True. And we also know that inject nanobots and injury echo and instant virus are coming back from first edition, their conversions. This is something that I like about Starfinder, that Pathfinder has not really done up until recently, where Pathfinder 2nd edition kind of went out of its way to do new things and show how different it was to 1st edition. And I think that kind of spread that crack between like people who like 1st edition and 2nd edition. There was less for people who liked and preferred the old stuff to really grab onto. And Starfinder is like, nah, well, here's inject nanobots. You remember the spell? It does something a little different now, but it's here. You got it. I like that. I think that giving people who might not want to learn a new system ways to see things that they might like and jump into is a good call.
Yeah, like touchstones basically to the old game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also they had an equipment page where we have a jetpack and jump jets and a load lifter and mobility enhancers. Those are all things that we've heard before, which is exciting. And we can also get a brief glance that there are credit prices and item levels for each of them. It definitely looks a little bit more straightforward, which I like. I also like that they're using the 2nd edition format of like having all of the different types kind of like spread out and under a heading with lines, so it's not repeating the same information over and over again. I think 1st edition Starfinder did that too, but it's clean here and I like it.
Yeah, yeah, it seemed pretty precise. Load lifter always makes me think of the power lifter from Aliens, but I know that's not it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's now, kind of, but not really.
Yeah, yeah. We also have heard a couple of things that they have told us exist, but we haven't seen before. Some examples is that Dustin mentions that there are 126 spells in the Starfinder core rulebook. Some are tech-inspired, some are pop culture references, and some are neither. One example is... they added vibe check as a spell.
Is that just when you stab somebody?
Maybe. There's also speak with computers.
Boo.
I like that name. And one of them is called new game, which is a 10th level spell. And they're also talking about a spell that does near infinite damage, at least over 9,000 somehow.
Oh, is that, it's intriguing. I wonder where that goes.
Right. Now, I'm hoping that, like, new game, like, actually is, like, some sort of crazy reality-altering reincarnation spell. Like when I hear a new game spell, that's what pops into my head, personally.
Yeah.
What do you think?
New game, yeah. Or something that allows you to change the setting of a fight.
Dustin mentions in chat that that spell has since been decided to deal 9,999 damage.
Oh, like a limit break. I get it.
Yes. Definitely. then apparently there's a spell that puts a black hole in your pocket, and a spell whose intro text is you edit someone's genetic code to turn them into a crab.
Carcinization virus, let's yeah. go.
Yeah, just all sort, like, it sounds like they're just going wild with some of the fun in this setting.
Look, I'm just get folded like a hamburger. I can't wait for people to save that spell and you just never do it, and then one day just start turning somebody into a crab, and then have everybody look at you like you're an eldritch deity.
Right?
What are you doing to that person?
One thing that we don't have up to show you is they showed off the 2-page Skittermander spread. Like with what the racial traits for Skittermanders are, because Skittermanders are going to be core in second edition.
I mean, to the surprise of absolutely no one.
Of absolutely no one! I remember from it that one of the things is they have six hands, and they have six hands, they have low light vision, and then their other ability is literally a downside, because being able to hold six hands worth of things is very good.
Yeah.
Their downside is called over-eager enthusiasm, where like they take penalties on things that like overwhelm their emotions kind of thing.
I just saw that they were keeping switching hands as an action. And it's like, oh, yeah. That sucks when you have six hands. Just spending your whole turn just grabbing on your five weapons.
Right. Hopefully they make a feat that makes that a little bit better if you have multiple hands. Because I think that you probably should. Honestly, improving hand economy for everybody is probably something that would be fine as a general feat.
Why is there a cost to it? I'm gonna be real. You never feel cool switching hands. Like, that's just one of those things where you put forced realism into a game for a reason, and I don't understand it, because there's people throwing out 99 damage and turning other people into crabs.
Like, I'm gonna be honest, I don't even think that it's realism. Because like, if I'm holding my scissors like this, it doesn't take me an action to do this. I just do it. Like it's a fundamental sensory motor behavior. I'm sorry, I'm going into like my behavioral health background, but like, it is a gamification of something that didn't need to be gamified.
Yeah, it feels like just an added rule. Like I get that you probably can't wield an AR-15 and a samurai sword concurrently very well. I get it. But once again, I'm turning somebody into a crab next turn. What a weird line to draw in the sand.
And also, like, if I'm playing an elf, do we really have to care about the realism of the handedness? Like, just let everybody do the thing.
Exactly.
Like, switching out items with your inventory items, or like resheathing a sword and getting something new, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But like, if I already have the thing in my hands, just let me do what I want with them in my hands. Let me drop that thing as a free action, and as a free action, change my sword. It's fine.
Yeah, they did mention on part of the playtest that like throwing grenades is part of the action of getting them out of whatever satchel they're in. And that was cool. It's like, cool. Yeah, that makes sense.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you wanted to go with realism, that is the kind of thing that probably needs more actions, but it's not fun. So why would you overfocus on that? I hope that's something that could be changed, because if they could change that rule between Pathfinder 2nd Edition and Starfinder 2nd Edition, be very good.
Yeah, also standard action serums. I don't care if you write that rule, that it takes a full round action to give somebody a serum. I'm ignoring that. Society table or not, I'm ignoring that. That's a standard action.
It's just too long to put syrup all over the body.
Somebody is going to give up their whole turn to help somebody, and you're going to penalize them to do stuff next turn to help somebody.
I think that's a really good point too. Like, helping your friend should not feel like a suboptimal choice.
Yeah,
I agree with you there. Like,
yeah,
let me make it easy to give my friend the thing.
Yeah, that's why we do it in our home games. It's just don't penalize. make cooperation helpful, and people are going to want to do it more, you know?
It's true. But making cooperation hard is how you get situations where everybody focuses on min-maxing themselves. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You could just be me in our first edition Savage Tide game, where I spend every one of my resources healing, because that's the point of the game we're at. It's great.
What? You're doing a lot of stuff. I saw you execute that man for no reason.
I did execute that man for no reason. I'm going to be honest with you. You cannot tell Mike this. I was very tired and wanted the game to be done so I could go home. And that's the only reason that man died. And I felt like when he called me out for it, I was like, oh, I killed this guy. I'm sorry for the curse.
You're the worst. No, that one's getting bleeped. Let me just write it down here. 1 minute, 1 second. 1 hour, 1 minute.
I literally coup de grace that man on my cleric of Shizuru, who's supposed to be like following all of these tenets, just because Alex the player wanted to go home.
Was cranky tired? Yes. That man died because you were cranky tired.
I had a feeling you would appreciate that truth bomb. That is something that I can admit, but like, like if Mike found out, he'd go, "Oh man, you killed a man because you were tired." Like, just like that.
Oh, can't believe you've done that.
Like you know, Alex, when some people get tired, they just get hangry, or like they get grumpy and you kill people. Like, oh no, please.
It's all right. It'll have less lasting implications than me rolling ones and twos on hit point die. So, well, you know, we can all make suboptimal choices from time to time.
Let that be a warning to all of you.
Always roll hit points. You can always get max.
That's true. You can also be James and roll suboptimally.
It's not a problem if you're a frontliner, because that's not your problem. You just die.
Well, I mean, but you don't have to be a frontliner. You've got a sling.
Yeah, but like...
You choose. I watch you. You're very good at tactically choosing where you want to be and when.
Right, because I have a lot of idiots that I'm helping corral here.
I'm an idiot.
I know, and sometimes it's my turn to get up there and get my butt whooped.
God, do you remember that time when the Shambling Mountain came out, and I was like, oh, I got my scroll.
I am sorry I couldn't help you more. I just didn't want to get torn asunder by a salad.
Yeah, like I did. I got torn asunder by a salad. Mm. I'm supposed to tear the salads asunder.
Nah, he ranched you.
He ranched dressing me for sure. Well, that about does it for our coverage of all the PaizoCon announcements for Starfinder 2nd Edition at PaizoCon 2024. Overall, James, what were your big takeaways?
Mostly it was that live play and seeing the action economy, and that everybody had things to do that weren't necessarily prescribed. Once again, would wish it went worse for them, but it gave me hope that there would be things in this game for me. So generally positive.
Yeah, if you're listening, I know Dustin's listening. Thirsty, if you're listening, do another actual play. Make them suffer. Rot grind them, Thurston.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I believe in you. We want to see it. Everyone here at No Direction wants to see it. And if you want to join us on No Direction, where we can see Thirsty rot grind his developers, make sure to go to NoDirectionPodcast.com, where you could find a link to our Discord, where we hang out and do things. Also, NoDirectionPodcast.com has like blogs and stuff that you might enjoy while you're waiting for Thirsty to absolutely grind every single one of his fellow co-workers into salad. That's what we want. Salad them. Salidify. That sounds, I don't even know. I'm losing it, y'all. I think I'm going crazy with the madness of the newborn. So until next time, go beyond with no direction.